The Senate will come to order. And the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. George. Girard. Haas. Haas. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger.
Here.
Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonsky. Przonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we'll post the colors. The Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Senator Johnson. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Our invocation today is from Pastor David Peterson of Trinity Lutheran Church in Silverton.
Let us pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this beautiful state of Oregon, for its people, for its representative government, and for the men and women of the Senate. Be with them in their deliberations today, and may the words of their lips and the meditations of their hearts be acceptable to you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Honorary pages today are Savannah Kylie, Andrea Bartlow, Ben McMorrin, and Jeremy Goodrich, and they're here as guests of Senator Boquist. We also have Armin Tokalu and Eric Shute, and they're here as guests of Senator Devlin. Thank you for coming and helping us out today. Courtesies of the Senate. It is a birthday today. And so, Senator Burdick and Senator Ferrioli, would you come circle around the desk of the good Senator Winters and have a little happy birthday song?
Join us in singing Happy Birthday to Senator Winters.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jackie. Happy birthday to you.
You look beautiful.
Courtesies of the Senate. Chair recognizes Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have some very important people in our midst today. Lined on the side aisles on both sides are 37 outstanding student scholars from Oregon's community colleges. These people will be presented with awards and scholarships to honor their achievements. The students are chosen by community college faculty and administration based on their academic standing and college experience, including activities in their communities. The program for today's awards was delivered to your offices. I encourage you to read some of the stories of these amazing people. They really demonstrate why access to post-secondary education is so important. The scholars are from community colleges from all over Oregon. I'd like to ask the scholars at this time to please stand and come forward to the bar on either side. And when I read your name, wave. I believe I was given this task because they know that I've been a teacher and therefore I'm very experienced at mispronouncing people's names. From Blue Mountain Community College, Candace Herado and Carissa Williams. From Central Oregon Community College, Jessica Smith and Si Young Ying Yi Hin Sa Ta Ki. From Chemeketa Community College, Mandy Ter and Bessie and Jeremy Mitchell. From Clackamas Community College, Donna McBee and Michael Vu. From Clatsop Community College, Andrew Joby and Victoria Lagerquist. From Columbia Gorge Community College, Tony Cribbs and Jennifer Jensen. From Klamath Community College, Mariah Devon Riddle and Carrie Morrow. From Lane Community College, Andrea Russell and Jeremy Sariano. From Lynn Benton Community College, Kimberly Macaloni. From My Mount Hood Community College, Stefan Dietrich. From Oregon Coast Community College, Beth Clark and Nancy King. From Portland Community College, Amber Park, Marissa Johnson, Chris Goslier, Mahri Ko Newton, John Smith, Nicholas Hinsinger, and Jason Smith. From Rogue Community College, Lori Kiner and Tyrone McDermott. From Southwest Oregon Community College, Melissa Sales and Juan Jui Tron. From Tillamook Bay Community College, Terry Winkle and Audrey Rieger. From Treasure Valley Community College, Sharon Caldwell Barr and Vanessa Gomez. From Umpqua Community College, Rasheen Brown and Amander Elder. Congratulations to all of you. We're looking forward to a bright future with your contributions to the state of Oregon. Give them a big hand.
Thank you, Senator Monroe, for doing that on behalf of the Senate. Thank all of you excellent scholars for your hard work and what you have accomplished. And you don't know what you've just got yourself into, because we need some scholarly advice right now. And we have some assignments for you when we're done, and then you can give us the answers, because we need some of that. Thank you very much for being here today and for your accomplishments. Chair recognizes Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's my honor today to introduce an intern from Pendleton, Alex Featherstone. She's a student at Willamette University, first-year student, and she comes in on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but today made it in on a Wednesday. So I would ask that the Senate give courtesies to Alex and welcome her to the Capitol.
Alex, welcome, and thank you for helping out the good senator. Further courtesies. Remonstrances. Chair recognizes Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President. Most of you know I'm a sports nut. A lot of you probably think I'm just a nut. But anyway, there's something unique happening in Major League Baseball today. Today, all players in Major League uniforms will be wearing the number 42. And that number is not worn by any other player in Major League Baseball at any point in time, with one exception of Mariano Rivera, who is the reliever for the Yankees, who was grandfathered in. Because a few years ago, they retired the number 42. And the reason all Major League players are wearing that number today is today marks the 62nd anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking into Major League Baseball. A very historic moment, a very life-changing moment for the United States. And I thought it was appropriate that we recognize that. But I also want to go just a step beyond that, because there's another gentleman. It's kind of like this guy was the second guy to step on the surface of the moon. We forget who that was. But this gentleman's name was Larry Doby. That same season, he was the first African-American to break in to the major league ranks in the American League. So both of these gentlemen need to be honored. And today is a special day in Major League Baseball, and I just wanted to acknowledge it.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. Yesterday, the good senator from Eugene raised a concern about something I said about a proposal that the senator from Scappoose and I have to redirect the public purpose charge to pay for energy improvements in our public schools. So I did want to clarify. The senator from John Day has put on your desk the statutes currently directly in the public purpose charge and the new proposal to redirect the money to our schools. And I would say that if we were intending to do a one-time sweep of the public purpose charge and put it into the general fund, I would agree. However, if you'll look at the bill that's been put on your desk, you will see that the bill actually amends the statutes governing the public purpose charge and redirects the money away from welfare for big corporations and invests it in energy conservation for our local schools. Let's face it, folks, the legislature created the public purpose charge and we, the legislature, redirect it. I'm one who believes that we got to put the education of our children first as a core function of our state government, and our bill reflects that. Now, I understand that there's some people outside this building that just don't like kids and would like to continue to see the money subsidizing big corporations. So let's just ignore the bill that we have that we've introduced. And instead, maybe we can figure out some other way we can spend it if folks wanted to go to corporate welfare. Perhaps we could redirect that money to go to the business energy tax credit, the BETSI that we've all been talking about that was passed last session. We could take the dollars that are currently spent in the public purpose charge and redirect those to the BETSI, and therefore filling nearly a $150 million hole. It is a question of priorities, colleagues. At a minimum, we should stop corporate welfare from double dipping. Those corporations that go get a BETSI credit and then turn around to the Energy Trust of Oregon and get double money. I have a hard time that we're doing this while we have schools like Estacada High School that needs $167,000 to replace windows, or Clackamas River Elementary School that needs $225,000 for solar upgrades. Thank you, Mr. President.
Message from the Governor.
To the Honorable President of the Senate, the Assembly attached to the list of the government's appointments, state boards, and commissions, state confirmation, you might have read by ORS 171562 and ORS 171565. These appointments, reappointments, are submitted for your consideration to be effective upon Senate confirmation. Sincerely, Dan Kulgowski, Governor. Trustees of the State Library, Shannon Applegate, Sue Burkholder. Board of Examiners and Nursing Home Administrators, Arlene Gardner, Margaret Howe, Michael Weatherby. Board of Commissioners of the Port of Portland, Steve Corey, Judith Johansson. State Board of Psychologist Examiners, Ken Anderson, Susan Latham. Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, Mario Alba.
Motion from the House.
Mr. President, members of the Speaker, informing the House has passed Senate Bill 462, House Bills 25, 28, 2655, 2671, 3055, 5001, 5029, House Bills 29, 2255, 2369, 2371, 2393, 2470, and the Speaker has signed Senate Bill 30.
Reports from the conference committees. In reports from standing committees, in accordance with SR 8.551, committee report summary number 66 was distributed to members today.
This information will be recorded in the journals and the state's report in so order. Reports from special committees. Propositions and motions. Actions on executive appointments that require Senate confirmation. Introduction and first reading of the Senate measures.
Senate Bill 974, relating to smoking.
These are transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 5528, relating to pension administration, occupational therapy, license support, and acquired emergency. Senate Bill 71, relating to residency of public charter school students. Senate Bill 87, relating to death investigations. Senate Bill 122, relating to higher education. Senate Bill 128, relating to documents issued by ODOT. Senate Bill 759, local public safety's coordinating councils, and acquired emergency.
These are passed to the calendar. Third reading of Senate measures. Senator Devlin. Senator Farioli.
Mr. President, we believe we can proceed with today's agenda.
Okay. Is that correct? You're now hands up, Senator Devlin.
Mr. President, we can proceed with today's agenda, and we're just waiting for your word.
We're now under the third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 8, Memoriam Mark Ted Winters, 1924 through 2008.
Recognize Senator Jenny Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I first met Ted Winters back in 1974 when I was a reporter for the Associated Press covering Salem. And it was in the heady days of the McCall administration. It was during Tom McCall's last year. Exciting things had gone on, were continuing to go on. We had the bottle bill, we had land use planning, we had the beach bill, and we had Ted Winters. Ted Winters was a former lifer in the Oregon State Penitentiary who had a religious conversion, a true religious conversion, in 1963 and turned his life around. Those were different days in the early 70s, and when a chance to prove his redemption came forward to Ted Winters, he grabbed it, and he never looked back. Ted Winters was a truly gentle man. I love to hear our good colleague refer to herself as the gentle lady from District 10, because gentle is the word I most associate with Ted Winters. And to think of this gentle soul in a prison setting makes my heart hurt. But when he redeemed himself and he became a true star, not just in Oregon politics, but in the hearts of everyone around him, that just showed the power of redemption. On your desk today is the story that I wrote about Ted Winters when I first learned about him. And what provoked the story was the appointment of Ted Winters, former lifer, tough dude, a prisoner's prisoner, a criminal's criminal, who redeemed himself. And this story, the news hook for this story was Ted Winters' appointment as ombudsman for the state of Oregon, one of Tom McCall's closest associates, most high-profile confidants, and there he was. As state ombudsman. The way his path out of prison, and you can find all the details about his life of crime that led up to him being in prison, but his path out of prison started with a stroke of luck. Marco Haggard, who some of the older of us might still remember from Portland State University, he taught political science, but he was also politically active himself, had been ombudsman in the state of Oregon. He was running the Oregon Office of Economic Opportunity, and the work release program from the state prison had just started. And somehow Marco Haggard connected with Ted Winters and gave him that opportunity to come out of the prison into work release and to prove himself. Ted proved to be such a reliable and enthusiastic worker that he actually got promoted. And so he was working up in Portland in the Albina neighborhood, very troubled neighborhood at the time. And so he'd work very hard by day, and then he'd go spend the night in the county jail. And that was his life. So as he continued to prove himself, Tom McCall advanced him to the position of first assistant ombudsman for the state of Oregon, and then ombudsman. And then that eventually led to a full pardon. Ted Winter's criminal history was erased by that move by Tom McCall. Now, this story that is on your desk from 1974, I had just met Ted Winters before I wrote this story. The story ran nationally. It was on the front page of the Washington Star. And this story, I think, does a reasonable job of telling the story of Ted Winters. But of course, there was something terribly missing from this story, because you don't get Ted Winters unless you get Ted and Jackie Winters. And that's what I didn't know when I wrote this story. But I soon found out, because Ted and Jackie became very good friends of mine. And we spent a lot of time together. And I got to be a witness to the joy and happiness and just excitement and sense of adventure that these two had, and that I never saw diminish over the years. And we have to keep in mind, this was the early 70s. You know, there were ignorant, hateful people around. Ted Winters was white. Jackie Winters was black. But you know what? If anyone ever had a problem with that, that was their problem. That wasn't going to stop Ted and Jackie. No way, no how. And they had a good sense of humor about that and everything else. When I got married, I still remember it was a small wedding, only family and close friends. Ted and Jackie were there. And I still remember the present that I got for my wedding. It was two sets of bath towels. One was a beautiful set of white towels, and one was a beautiful set of black towels, just like Ted and Jackie. And it was a very meaningful gift. And as the years went by, the amazing thing about Ted and Jackie was how supportive they were of each other. Jackie supported Ted as he made his transition from a lifer in the Oregon State Prison to a fully contributing, dynamic, successful, star quality person in state government and everything else he did. Ted supported Jackie with her four sons. Ted was, he radiated unconditional love for those boys. Every time he talked, you could see it. It was Ted's family, Jackie and her sons. And he supported them in that. And then when Jackie formed Jackie's Ribs, he was a full participant. He was Jackie's Ribs as much as Jackie was Jackie's Ribs. In fact, when Jackie went on to do other things, Ted was Jackie's Ribs for a while, as I recall. So they had this tremendous way of supporting each other. One would have an opportunity, and the other would be there, just right behind him, fully engaged. And we all know how important Ted was to Senator Winters, our gentle lady from District 10, when she got elected, and how he was a mainstay in her office. He was a mainstay for a lot of people, but no one as much as our gentle lady from District 10. And when you see her looking beautiful, as she does every day in her bright colors, you know it's because when she get dressed in the morning, she would ask Ted, how does this work? Is this okay? And if he gave his approval, out she went. Well, she still does that. And she did that this morning, and look at her now. Colleagues, please join me in honoring Ted Winters by voting yes on SCR 8. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Madam President. I was asked to speak in this chamber at the memorial service for Ted Winters, and what I'm going to say is somewhat close to that. Senator Farioli was here that day and spoke magnificently. Of course, Senator Winters and her family was here. I don't have heroes in my life, except for my mother and father and a grandmother. I don't have heroes. But it's interesting. For some reason, I was drawn to Ted Winters, and I still don't know why. And if I may be allowed to read just parts of this lifer, I would like to do so.
Please do so.
The judge considered him beyond all hope. The guards considered him pure trouble. The cons respected and feared him. Nobody messed with a man like Ted. A thief from the time he was 9 years old, he had spent more time in prison than out of it. He was well known to both the criminals and the cops as one of the toughest cons around. Ted Winters was in trouble almost his entire life on the outside, and Ted Winters was in trouble almost the entire time he was on the inside. But there's more. This is very revealing. Very revealing. The last few months have been a living hell. I can't keep going on like this. It really isn't worth living at all. I had no reason left to survive. The solution was to end it now, to die, to actually ultimately die. I let the thought surface and found comfort in it. Here was my solution, something I could put in my energy into accomplishing. All I had to do was now decide how to do it. That is suicide. And then the final thing I will read. Now, therefore, in view of the foregoing, and by virtue of the authority vested in me, I, Tom McCall, Governor of the great state of Oregon, hereby grant a full pardon to Mark P. Winters with respect to the crimes enumerated above, restoring to him all the rights and privileges heretofore enjoyed by him under the laws of the state of Oregon. I said it that day, I will say it today. I do not understand how Ted Winters did what he did. I do not understand how a man who was without doubt literally incarcerated almost his entire life, a man who was feared by police, but even in the inside of that joint down the street. One day in 1981, as a freshman, I decided to show off as a state representative, and I said, I want to be locked up at Oregon State Penitentiary. I want to live with one of the cons. I want to sleep in solitary confinement for one night. I lasted 12 hours, and I begged them to let me out. Begged them to let me out. They locked me up with Maynard, who at that time was an armed robber, four-time loser. They put me in with him. He was so mad he couldn't stand it. He wanted nothing to do with me. His job was to keep me alive. Keep me alive over there. That place is a hellhole. I was in with the lions and tigers, and I wasn't about to go solitary confinement. I was done. I was finished. Ted Winters spent more time in solitary confinement almost than he did when he was out in the yard. That's how much trouble he was in over there. To be the top con in a joint like that, you got to be tough, and you got to be smart. And Ted Winters was not a big man. Judges would see him coming. Cops would see him coming. It's Ted. And yet, the man one day is pardoned by the governor of the state of Oregon. Now, I'm not going to take away from the role that Jackie played in that or that religion played in that. But at 65 years of age, it is a mystery to me. It is a mystery to me how he was able, through his human spirit and his willpower, to overcome what he overcame. Every time I was in a social gathering, if I saw Ted, I went to Ted. I don't care who else was there. I wanted to talk to Ted. I wanted to be with Ted. I have one regret. I will take it to my grave. Ted Winters wanted to take me back in that joint and show me the hole that he was in. He wanted to take me through that joint and show me all the crevices. I never got around to doing it. The last two times he was in that hospital, I was in his hospital room. And I thought, surely he's going to beat this. He will come back to the Capitol. It didn't happen. He has to be, for me, one of the most remarkable human beings that will ever come into my life. For no other reason, I will never, ever understand
how any human being could overcome what he overcome and become pardoned by the state of Oregon. You got to understand, when he did get out, before he was pardoned, he was free. He was roaming all around here. He was roaming all around Salem. Time and again, they passed over him for the pardon. He should have run. He wanted to run. He was going to run, and he didn't run. He didn't run. He was down at the Greyhound bus station one night. He was taken off one night over that bridge. And on his own, he came back. He came back. There were no guards. There was no security. There was no bracelet on him. There was nothing. He came back. You tell me how a man who lives like that comes back. You tell me how you do it. You tell me what kind of willpower, what kind of heart, what kind of character you have to have. You tell me. I want one of you to tell me that. I will never, ever comprehend, be able to comprehend what he did. Maybe that's why I was attracted to him. There was something magical about him. He was smart. This was one smart con. He was a smart con. He was a tough con. Conniving, manipulating, trickery, he had it all. We used to talk about it. He had this little dance in his eyes. I loved his eyes. His eyes would dance. He had it all. He had charm. I think he figured that out early. This is a remarkable, remarkable man. Today, we honor him as a remarkable Oregonian. We also honor him because one of our peers has lost her mate for life, and that is Jackie. Her suffering is beyond description. She and this Ted were something else. It was more than a pair, for a lot of obvious reasons and not so obvious reasons. Ted Winters, I will always remember him. And while I don't have heroes, Ted, I am just sorry that you and I won't be able to take one last walk in that joint of joints, the lion's hole, that place where you dominated, but you found a way to break out of in a law-abiding way.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, co-carrier Senator Farioli. Oh, and let's thank Senator Atkinson for... Oh, Senator Walker.
Sorry. Thank you. I wanted to say something about my friend Ted Winters. Because when I came into the legislature with the gentle lady, we came in 1999, and I didn't have the opportunity to make acquaintance with Ted at that time. But when I came over to the Senate in 2003, the gentle lady and I shared office space next door to each other. And Ted had to walk by my office every day. And every day he walked by my office, he said hello. And he said hello to my staff, and he never, ever hesitated to stop and say hello. And after all this little hello, we decided finally we needed to find out a little bit more about each other. And so we had lots of opportunity to have conversation, and I finally shared with him that my brother spent 17 and a half years in prison. And so Ted and I had a lot of conversation about that. And I have to tell you, this weekend when I was home ever so briefly, I was shuffling things around under the table in my living room, and there was the book, Lifer, that Ted had given to me to read. And so I took a moment out of my day to sit down and read some passages out of it to remember what a great man Ted Winters was. And I want to say that the gentle lady, his partner, his mate for life, really made the difference. She is the person who brought out the gentle part in his soul. Because, you know, the good Senate president has talked about how he was a really hard criminal, and he was. But there was a gentle part in his soul that was waiting for a gentle woman to pull out and let the world see. He was one of the most gentle people I think I've ever met. And he loved his wife and his family so much. That was the most joyful part about seeing Ted come into the office every day, is that he would come in and his face would be filled with joy even when he wasn't feeling well. But my daughter, who's working for me again, just fell in love with this guy. She thought he was great. He actually told her secretly one time he was truly a Democrat, but he said, "I love my wife, and I love what she does, and I love being here." And what I'm going to miss the most, because we're going to join the good gentlelady for dinner this evening, is I'm going to miss the sweet little guy wearing an apron, serving dinner to the women. He just had a ball putting on the little apron and serving dinner to all of us powerful women. And I will remember him tonight when we have dinner. It will be sad, but it will also be joyful to know that I had the opportunity to know him like many of you. And I really appreciated the comments made by the good senator behind me here, who I had no idea had written this article in 1974. So it really is a time of memory and a time of celebration. And thank you very much, gentle lady, for sharing your husband, your mate, with all of us here in the legislature. We have truly enjoyed that opportunity.
Senator Atkinson.
Oregon is at a loss without Ted Winters. But the humble lesson of my friend Ted Winters is what God saves you from is what he uses you in.
Seeing no further discussion, Senator Farioli, co-carrier, do you wish to close?
Yes, Madam President, thank you. We wanted to do this for Ted Winters. We tried to keep this a secret from Jackie, but as you all know, that's really impossible. You can't keep any secrets in this building from Jackie. But I would like to welcome Brian and Bill and Marlon and Anthony and Bill's wife Pam, and several grandchildren are here on the side aisle. I'm glad that they're here to be able to witness this. This is part of the reason we weren't actually able to keep this on the down low as much as we wanted to, because we wanted the family to be here to hear the kind words and the words honoring Ted Winters. I had the honor of presiding over the memorial service here in this room, and I have to tell you, the place was packed. It was really an enjoyable and moving ceremony of celebration. The amazing grace of the man brought those people here, and it was just a joy to hear their remembrances of Ted Winters and their personal testimonies about how his actions had changed their lives. It was truly a living testimonial. I was impressed by the superintendent of the Department of Corrections, who served during the period of time when Ted Winters was incarcerated, who came here and stood up in front of his friends and family and said that he believed in Ted Winters, that he believed in the power of transformation, that he had seen the miracle happen in Ted's life. It was very, very moving. It impressed me because, you know, you don't talk your way out of the penitentiary. You just don't do that. The things that happened in Ted Winters' life really were miraculous. If you haven't read the book Lifer, let me urge you to do that. It's at once a quick read and a hard read. It's hard to read that book because Ted poured a lot of his life into that book. And what you find when you read that book is how a man like Ted Winters or any person can convert anger into love, can convert hate into forgiveness, and can convert bondage into freedom. All of those things happened to Ted Winters in his life. And in that book, you'll learn something about his ministry. He was not a person who was an in-your-face sort of an evangelical type person who pushed his beliefs on somebody else. But he found something absolutely incredible and totally miraculous. He learned that if you want people to see divinity, put God in your heart and put your heart in your work. Now that sounds very simple, but it's really profound. Put God in your heart, put your heart in your work, and people will see the divinity. And that's what Ted Winters was able to do. That's what he was able to communicate to other people. If we could all do that, it'd be a different world. Colleagues, I know that you want to join me and others in honoring Ted Winters with this memorial, SCR 8. I think it sends a great message. It shows that there is redemption, and that we believe in the healing power of love and people. So, colleagues, please join me in sending a unanimous vote for SCR 8. Thank you, Madam President.
The question now arises upon third reading and final adoption of SCR 8. Those who are of the opinion the bill should be adopted will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Verger.
Aye.
Walker. Whitsett.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Yes.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter. Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Girard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Mons Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Przonski.
Aye.
President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
SCR 8, having received a constitutional majority, is declared adopted. First reading of House measures. Oh, the clerk will read the bill. Okay, but I don't have the script for whatever, yeah. Okay, Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam President. Request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
So ordered. Seeing no opposition.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, I'd like to have courtesies of the Senate extended to a group of students from Merlo Station High School, which is in the Beaverton School District. They're here today with their teacher, John Davenport, and they are up in the gallery, and I would appreciate if courtesies of the extended of the Senate could be extended to Merlo Station High School students and their teacher. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Merlo Station students, thank you for coming. Hope you have a good day here in the Oregon State Senate and in your state capitol. I'd like to extend the courtesies of the Senate to you. Stay as long as you like. Thanks for coming by. We'll now turn to the regular order of business, which is the third reading of Senate measure. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Resolution 34, commemorating the Legislative Fiscal Office for 50 years of service.
Recognize Senator Margaret Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, colleagues. Each session, we honor and commemorate deeds, celebrate our histories, and take time to spotlight the works and lives of others in our resolves, as we have done here this morning so graciously. This morning, however, Senate Joint Resolution 34 salutes one of our own, the Legislative Fiscal Office and the extraordinary staff, collectively and for each individual who has served in what we call the Legislative Fiscal Office. Extraordinary public service, uncommon yet common sense and dedication are the hallmarks of the staff. Long hours, meticulous in his or her detail, there for us at every turn as needed, helping in what may be our most difficult task, creating a balanced budget with limited resources. Nonpartisan, on task and on time, Legislative Fiscal works timelessly like a Swiss watch. With the infinite grace of Italian design now for a half century, SJR 34 honors the 50th anniversary of LFO service to the legislature. Exceptional service is their norm. Professionalism is the standard. I invite you this morning to join me in saluting our staff, the Legislative Fiscal Office, on this, their 50th anniversary. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Walker.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President. I love these people in LFO. They are so awesome. And I never got to work with them as closely as I do now because I'm on Ways and Means. And I used to be jealous of the former Senator Schrader and others who would carry these bills that came out of Ways and Means, because they'd read this script and they sounded so intelligent. And I thought, gee, somebody's writing their script. And they were. It was LFO. And so it's really nice. I don't have to write my floor speeches anymore on these budget bills because they're going to write them for me. But they are so smart. They know the budgets backwards and forwards. They know when someone is not being completely truthful about their budget. They know where the bones are buried. They know the good questions to ask. And the good senator from Portland called them a Swiss watch, and I couldn't agree more. They just keep on ticking and keep on running smoothly every single day. I could not do my job as chair, co-chair of the Natural Resources Subcommittee if I didn't have LFO staff behind me every single step of the way. These folks are awesome. Please give them a little bit of extra time these days, because we're asking all policy bills to have fiscals and revenues, so it's really putting a lot of stress on their office. But they are your best friend. All you have to do is pick up the phone or go down and visit and ask, and they will tell you everything you need to know about how this policy impacts the budget. So, colleagues, please make them your friends. They are our friends, and we love them dearly. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Further discussion? Senator Carter, you wish to close? Question now lies upon third reading and final passage of SJR 34. Those the opinion bills to pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Ronis Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
SJR 34. I have received a constitutional majority as declared passed. Clerk reads bill.
Senate Bill 536, relating to the Federal Real ID Act of 2005.
Recognize Senator Rick Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. On May 11, 2005,
thank you. Colleagues, Senate Bill 536 comes to you from your Committee on Business and Transportation. On May 11, 2005, the Congress of the United States passed an emergency Iraq War Tsunami Relief Funding Bill. It was rushed through because it was very important. It was an omnibus bill, and in that was stuck provisions for a Real ID Act. There was absolutely no public input, very little legislative discussion, because it was put into that omnibus funding bill. Now in 2009, in perhaps the greatest example of bi-state, bipartisan, red-blue objections, Real ID has continued to be postponed by the federal government because of the objections of the states. And in fact, you'll see on your desk a number of states, over 20 states, have either totally flat-out rejected conforming with Real ID or have passed resolutions with the intent to not fully comply with Real ID. Now, states are not required to comply with the law, and there's no monetary penalty for states who don't comply. But residents of states whose licensing does not meet those standards are threatened not to have their citizens board airports, board airplanes, or federal buildings. And yet that provision has continued to be postponed. Currently, the Department of Homeland Security estimates that nationwide, implementation of Real ID will cost states $3.9 billion. And so far, Congress has appropriated just $48 million in the entire country to assist states with the implementation of Real ID. Senate Bill 536 is very similar to a measure that we passed unanimously last session, in a bill that then ended up not coming back to the floor for finality. SB 536 prohibits Oregon agencies from expending funds to implement the rest of the federal Real ID Act of 2005 unless sufficient federal funds are allocated to cover the cost. It also requires the Oregon Department of Transportation to analyze a report on the cost of implementing the Real ID Act. As you recall, we have taken two major steps to ensure the quality and the accuracy of driver's licenses in the state of Oregon. We did this first in 2005 with setting up a program to achieve biometric data. And we also did it a year ago to ensure that every driver's license listed or issued in Oregon went to a legal U.S. resident or someone who was legally in the country. Those are real ID compliant provisions, and they exist and are not affected by this bill. But the rest of real ID is a very, very serious issue. It means taking your original identity documents and scanning them, holding them, and making them available with the other 50 states and the federal government. This has very serious privacy issues for our citizens and the citizens around the country, and which is why both the ACLU, states, individuals, Republicans, Democrats, oppose that type of invasion of our privacy. It has identity theft risks. The federal government has not been able to ensure that we will have a secure database. And with the steps that this state has already taken in many other states for secure driver's licenses, maintaining a database of personal information without the money to implement that or the security of our citizens is simply something we should not do. And as you can see from the list, from the west to the east, from the north to the south, states are saying this is an issue of our states' rights. We will protect our own driver's licenses, but we're not going to share the very personal information with the federal government or give them the tools to collect even more data of our individual citizens and make that at risk. I would urge an aye vote on Senate Bill 536. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Further discussion? Question now rises upon a third reading, the final passage of Senate Bill 536. Those opinion bills pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, President Courtney.
Yes.
30 ayes.
The Senate Bill 5, excuse me, Senator Cruz, he's now recorded. Senate Bill 536, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The first reading of House measure, excuse me, recognize Senator Brian Boquist, please.
Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I just wanted to note it for the record. I think there are portions of the Real ID Act that still need to be implemented, but this is a federal mandate that is unfunded at this point. Thank you.
Your vote explanation has been placed on the record. We're now under the first reading of House measures, please.
House Bill 5001, Relief Management Administration, Oregon Board of County and Declared Emergency. House Bill 5029, Relief Management Administration, State Marine Board and Declared Emergency. House Bill 2059, Relief and Health Professional Regulatory Boards. House Bill 2255, Relief Manufactured Dwelling Nonprofit Cooperatives. House Bill 2369, Relief Motor Vehicles. House Bill 2371, Privacy of Identification Documents. House Bill 2393, Relief Sheriffs. House Bill 2470, Relief Dogs. House Bill 2528, Relief Special Invited Licenses. House Bill 2655, Relief Adverse Possession of Public Land. House Bill 2671, Solid Waste Disposal. House Bill 3055, Relief Evocation of Anatomical Gift.
Transmitted to the President's desk for referral, the second reading of House measures.
House Bill 2466, one administration rule by Legislative Council and declare emergency.
These are passed the counter. Third reading of House measures. The other business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list 92 and 93, were distributed to the members on April 14th. The referrals will be recorded in the Journal of the State's report is so ordered. Under announcements, recognize Senator Jason Atkinson, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. President, there is no Floyd McMullen Fire Brigade today. There is no Floyd McMullen Fire Brigade. Thank you.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Richard Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Democrats, please go directly to your caucus room. We'll try to get you out by 12:10.
Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli. Do you have any announcements? He does not. Okay. Again, we do not have a floor session on Friday. There will be no floor session here on Friday. If there are no further announcements, and then without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:15 tomorrow, Thursday, April 16th. The Senate is adjourned.